January 14th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, the U.S. House of Representatives impeaches President Donald Trump.
The bipartisan way the House demonstrated that no one is above the law, not even the President of the United States.
Also ahead, UN accuses police in Peru of using excessive force to quell mass protests.
The investigators view the crackdown by Peru's security forces as unnecessarily harsh.
Plus, President Trump calls for an end to political violence. These stories and more are next. The Democratic majority U.S. House impeached President Donald Trump Wednesday, charging him with inciting an insurrection attempting to overturn the Electoral College vote count at the U.S. Capitol last week. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the trial in the U.S. Senate will not start until after President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated next week.
In the same chamber they evacuated just a week ago to escape pro-Trump protesters attempting to overturn the election of Joe Biden as president. The U.S. House of Representatives impeached President Donald Trump by a vote of 232 to 197.
Donald John Trump, President of the United States, is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors.
The single article of impeachment charging Trump with inciting that insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
After Vice President Pence informed House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that he would not invoke a U.S. constitutional provision temporarily removing Trump from power, the House voting to impeach in a heavily locked down Capitol protected by the U.S. National Guard. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
The president saw the insurrectionists not as the foes of freedom, as they are, but as a means to a terrible goal, the goal of his personally clinging to power, the goal of thwarting the will of the people, the goal of ending in a fiery and bloody clash nearly 2.5 centuries of our democracy.
Most House Republicans argued the president's actions did not rise to the level of impeachment, but some acknowledged his role in the riot. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said the president should be censured for his actions.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding.
Now the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice, Trump has defended his speech at the rally before the riot. But he condemned violence on his behalf Wednesday.
No true supporter of mine could ever endorse political violence.
10 Republicans did vote to impeach the president.
My vote to impeach our sitting president is not a fear-based decision,
including high-ranking Representative Liz Cheney, who condemned Trump's actions as the greatest betrayal ever by a president. The impeachment now moves to a trial in the U.S. Senate, where some Republicans could join Democrats to convict the president. Brookings Institution scholar Elaine Kamark said the next few days will play a key role in Republicans' decisions.
If we see a huge and ugly attack on the Capitol in the coming days, then I think there will be even more energy for conviction. If in fact, however, the tensions go down, then it's possible that the energy could go away and senators decide, no, they don't want to go as far as convicting President Trump.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announcing that trial would not begin until at least the day before Biden is inaugurated, possibly stalling his early agenda during the pandemic. Brookings Institution scholar Elaine Kamark.
That'll be unfortunate for Biden and unfortunate for the country, mostly because the one thing we are all waiting on is we're waiting on getting money for COVID-19.
In a poll taken after Wednesday's riot, 56% of registered voters said Trump was responsible for the violence at the Capitol, and a slight majority said he should be removed from office. If convicted, Trump would be barred from ever again running for federal office. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
President-elect Joe Biden is not taking a position on whether the Senate should convict President Trump. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Biden is blaming the president for what he calls an armed insurrection by Trump backers. But as the Senate trial looms, Biden says he hopes his former chamber can balance that with other urgent business, like his nominations and more virus relief measures. Biden's due today to outline plans for spurring vaccine distribution and more economic aid.
President Trump is calling for an end to political violence, issuing a video in the hours after the House voted to impeach him for a second time. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
There is never a justification for violence.
The newly impeached President Trump is calling for his supporters to find ways to ease tensions and calm tempers, and says he's been briefed about plans for more violence in the lead up to Joe Biden's inauguration.
There must be no violence, no law breaking, and no vandalism of any kind.
The Trump video was released at the same time House Speaker Nancy Pelosi signed the articles of impeachment against him.
Donald Trump is a clear and present danger to our country.
Trump made no mention of being impeached a second time, and his allies say they don't think the Senate would vote to convict. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
As the country prepares for President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration, music will play a huge part of the events. The entertainment that will be part of the festivities will be broadcast as a primetime special. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaroletta reports.
Tom Hanks will host the inauguration special that producers say will showcase the American people's resilience, heroism, and unity. Justin Timberlake and Ant Clemens will perform a new song called Better Days that they call a song of hope. Jon Bon Jovi and Demi Lovato are scheduled to perform as well. The special will be shown live on ABC, CBS, CNN, NBC, and MSNBC, as well as streamed on several services, including YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm Archie Zaroletta.
Racing against a surging COVID-19 death toll, the United States is releasing all available doses of the coronavirus vaccine and has instructed states to immediately begin vaccinating Americans 65 years and older and adults with medical conditions. VOA's Patsy Widaskuwara reports.
This mass vaccination facility in Manhattan, New York, has the capacity to vaccinate 10,000 people every 12 hours. But with the current state allocation of 300,000 doses per week, there is simply not enough vaccines. Howard Zucker from New York's Department of Health.
We're going to need more vaccines. We consider this a wartime mobilization and that lives are on the line every minute of every day.
Meanwhile, other states like Pennsylvania and New Jersey cannot administer their vaccine supply quickly enough. The Defense Department said more than 29 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been delivered nationwide. But according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, only 9 million shots have been administered as of Tuesday. Dr. Graham Snyder is the Medical Director, Infection Prevention and Hospital Epidemiology at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
You need somebody to give the vaccine. You need a place to give the vaccine. And then you need the electronic infrastructure to schedule, to do all the scheduling communication. That includes education about who should and shouldn't get the vaccine, side effects, and monitoring. What we have seen so far has been varying models of who provides that.
Earlier this week, the federal government said it will release all available doses of the vaccine instead of holding half in reserve for second doses. It also released new guidelines on who can get the shot. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar.
We are telling states they should open vaccinations to all people over age 60, 65 and over, and all people under age 65 with a comorbidity with some form of medical documentation as defined by governors.
President-elect Joe Biden has pledged to deliver 100 million shots in his first 100 days, beginning January 20th. He emphasized equity in how vaccines are distributed, particularly to poor people and minorities who most often hold vulnerable jobs such as supermarket cashiers and bus drivers. But so far, there is not enough data on the demographics of vaccine recipients. Tyson Bell is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Virginia Health System.
you don't have that data, then you're really just walking blind. And what we know from the historical experience of this country is that if we are not looking specifically at populations that are at risk, then they ultimately get left out.
On Tuesday, the U.S. reported its highest number of COVID-19 deaths in one day, 4,327, according to Johns Hopkins University. 380,000 Americans have died from the coronavirus, with 23 million cases nationwide. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
This is the Voice of America. Police in Belgium made 116 arrests after demonstration in Brussels over the death of a young black man while in police custody turned violent. Police said the violence took place after a largely peaceful demonstration Wednesday of about 500 protesters, some holding Black Lives Matter signs, ended in downtown Brussels. Police say protesters threw projectiles, set fires, damaged street furniture and police vehicles, and injured several officers, including one who was hospitalized. Lebanese authorities have begun enforcing an 11-day nationwide shutdown and round-the-clock curfew, hoping to limit the spread of coronavirus infections and a dramatic surge after the holiday period. For the first time starting Thursday, residents were required to request a one-hour permit to be allowed to leave the house for emergencies, including going to the bakery, pharmacies, doctors, hospitals, or airports. Authorities were forced to take a tougher approach as the country's hospitals ran out of capacity and beds with daily infections reaching an all-time high of 5,440 cases last week. Europe's top human rights court has agreed to look into Ukraine's complaints alleging human rights violations in Russia's annexed Crimea Peninsula. The Strasbourg-based European Court of Human Rights concluded that Ukraine's case against Russia is backed by sufficient evidence and decided Thursday to start looking into the case. It did not say when it will deliver a ruling. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Polls have opened in Uganda's election, which pits long-ruling leader Yoweri Museveni against musician-turned-politician Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as Bobi Wine. Authorities blocked internet access ahead of the election. Reporter Halima Atumani has the details.
As polls opened in Uganda Thursday morning, internet access was still cut off from the night before as authorities sought to limit access to information and social media. Over 17 million voters are expected to cast their ballots to elect lawmakers and choose a president among 10 candidates. 76-year-old President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, is facing off against musician-turned-politician Robert Kyagulanyi, known as Bobi Wine, who is half his age. Uganda's Electoral Commission said voting would start at 7 in the morning. But at some polling stations in Jinja District, voters like Harry Takulo had to wait until 9 o'clock as ballot papers arrived late.
People came early. They expected to vote early so that we move on. Come what may, I have to vote, and I don't want other people to decide for me.
Millions of young Ugandans are voting for the first time, and some, like 19-year-old Evans Mukasa, are hoping for a change after 3 decades under the same president.
We are a community of change. We are the youth today and the fathers tomorrow. We've been into this situation for a couple of years. It's not that I'm speaking because Museveni is in power, but as Uganda, we need to know our future. So we are making our legacy. We are the regeneration now.
UN rights officials warned Sunday the elections were unlikely to be free and fair. Campaigning was marred by violence that left 56 people dead, rights violations, and restrictions on opposition candidates and supporters. In line to cast his ballot, Yemeni Ugandan Ali Hamad said it was important to vote nonetheless.
If in campaigns it was really violent, what about just voting? But it's good you show the candidate I'm going to vote so that the winner or the one who has rigged will know that, these people really had their support.
The U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Natalie Brown, on Wednesday said the U.S. would not observe the election because authorities denied more than 75% of their accreditation requests. Polls close at 4 in the afternoon, Ugandan time, and results will be announced by Saturday afternoon. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
After months of accusations that China was obstructing an independent investigation, a team of the World Health Organization experts have landed in Wuhan, China. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the team will try to uncover the origin of the coronavirus that has killed nearly 2 million people globally.
WHO's fact-finding mission in China did not get off to a great start. Chinese officials blocked two members of the WHO team from boarding their plane in Singapore after they tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies. The rest of the team landed Thursday in Wuhan, where they will spend about a month. The first 2 weeks will be in quarantine at the insistence of Chinese authorities. Beijing has repeatedly been accused of obstructing an independent investigation into the coronavirus. Beijing has also attempted to deflect blame for the devastation brought by the global pandemic. For the World Health Organization, it is a tricky diplomatic and political situation. WHO Emergencies Program Chief Mike Ryan insists the team does not intend to blame China or anyone else.
Let this mission and let other missions be about the science, not about the politics. We are looking for the answers here that may save us in future, not culprits and not people to blame.
More than 120 countries have called for an independent investigation into the origins of the virus. Many governments accuse Beijing of not doing enough to contain its spread. Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump has been especially outspoken, frequently speaking of the China virus and demanding the United Nations hold Beijing accountable. China, for months, rejected calls for an international probe. But in July, China and the WHO finally agreed on a plan. China insisted on allowing its scientists to do the initial research. That research could be invaluable, says Archie Clements, an infectious disease expert at Australia's Curtin University.
It's not like nothing's been happening for the last 12 months. So there's a lot that's been happening, and a lot of evidence has already been generated. So one of the tasks of the WHO team is to go to China and to meet with scientists and to look at the evidence.
But so far, China has not revealed what its scientists discovered. Clements hopes the WHO team will soon gain access to that data.
A big part of these sorts of investigations is actually around developing relationships with people, having that personal contact, being able to ask questions privately in a safe environment, you know, building rapport, having the sort of conversations that, the open-ended conversations that may bring out things that you hadn't previously anticipated might be important.
The coronavirus was first discovered in late 2019 in Wuhan. Many experts believe the virus had long been present in bats, but was transferred to humans through another wild animal sold at a market. With the absence of facts, disinformation and speculation have abounded. Some U.S. officials have suggested the virus may have leaked from the nearby Wuhan Institute of Virology, one of China's top research labs. China has increasingly rejected the idea the virus originated in its country at all. Some state media reports claim it may have been imported by way of frozen seafood from Italy. A team of Chinese scientists recently argued the virus originated in the summer of 2019 in India. In March, a Chinese foreign ministry official offered an unfounded theory the U.S. military may have brought the epidemic to Wuhan. The World Health Organization hopes its team will soon offer answers, even if preliminary.
UN investigators are accusing police in Peru of having used excessive force to quell anti-government mass protests last November, killing two people and injuring hundreds of others. The Human Rights Office has released the findings of an investigation it carried out at the invitation of the Peruvian government into this event. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The investigators view the crackdown by Peru's security forces as unnecessarily harsh and in violation of international human rights norms and standards. Protesters took to the streets between November 9th and November 15th, challenging the legitimacy of the interim president, Manuel Merino, as well as in anger over general social conditions. The protests came to a head during violent clashes between police and demonstrators demonstrators in the capital, Lima, on November 15th. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says police officers did not distinguish between the largely peaceful protesters and the minority who allegedly were violent. She says investigators conclude human rights violations appear to have been committed. Based on interviews with victims and witnesses, as well as audio and video recordings and medical records.
The report says that police fired pellets from 12-gauge shotguns and tear gas canisters directly at people's heads and upper bodies, indiscriminately and from close range. Two protesters were killed by shotgun pellets fired at their torso, and more than 200 people, including passers-by, were injured.
Throssell says UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet notes people have the right to peaceful assembly, and potentially lethal force can be used only if there is an imminent threat of death or serious injury. It notes some people allegedly were physically and psychologically abused. The report also documents threats and attacks on journalists and human rights defenders. Throssell says the Peruvian authorities have cooperated with the UN investigation and have seen the report. She says the High Commissioner hopes the recommendations in the report will help the Peruvian government going forward, especially when it comes to holding perpetrators of crimes accountable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Reporting Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Iran is the new home base of the Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Analysts paint a more complicated picture, but agree Iran has long harbored senior al-Qaeda members, noting that Iran will continue to pose a challenge to the incoming Biden administration. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
The threat from Iran has been a main focus of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo during his nearly three-year tenure as the top U.S. diplomat, and that is not changing during his final days. Still, he raised eyebrows with this statement.
Al-Qaeda has a new home base. It is the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Pompeo said Al-Qaeda is operating under the hard shell of the Iranian regime's protection, and that Iran is essentially the new Afghanistan, a safe haven for the terrorist network that attacked America on September 11, 2001. Most experts say the alliance between Iran and Al-Qaeda is not new, and that Iran is not a home base, although they acknowledge Tehran has harbored senior Al-Qaeda figures for many years. Thomas Jocelyn of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
Well, in terms of Iran being the home base for Al-Qaeda, I think it's a little more complicated than that. We've been studying Al-Qaeda senior leadership for years, and they have a distributed sort of leadership platform. So they have leaders basically across several countries.
Other experts are suspicious of the late timing of Pompeo's remarks, saying they could be meant to constrain U.S. policy towards Iran going forward in the Biden administration. Ali Vaez of the Crisis Group.
I think Secretary Pompeo is really grasping at straws to find ways of creating obstacles for the Biden administration's announced desire to return to the JCPOA. But almost like everything else that Secretary Pompeo has tried to do in the past 4 years to kill the nuclear deal, I think it is bound to fail simply because there's no better alternative to it.
President-elect Joe Biden has said he would like to return the United States to the Iran nuclear deal if Tehran also returns to compliance regarding its atomic activities. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel's center's right party is choosing a new leader this weekend. Saturday's decision will help shape German voters' choice of a successor to Merkel at the helm of the European Union's biggest economy after her 16-year tenure. Merkel stepped down as leader of the Christian Democratic Union in 2018 and says she wouldn't seek a fifth term as chancellor. Her successor announced her resignation last February after failing to impose her authority on the party, setting up a new race for the job and potentially a chance to run for chancellor in Germany's September 26th election. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofwen Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.